Hey, Aisha. Come on in. It's so dark in here, but...
Oh, yeah, the lights are not here.
I'm Kim Chakanetsa, and this is The Comb, a BBC World Service original podcast. Each week, I comb the continent for stories that matter. Online, we are hashtag The Comb. In this episode, I want to introduce you to my colleague, Aisha.
Okay, how are you feeling about being at the other side of the mic?
Is it weird that I'm more nervous today than I was last time? I don't know why.
Really? What are you nervous about? Aisha, you're a pro.
Aisha is one of my many wonderful colleagues with BBC Africa in London. And she's worked with the Somali Service, Focus on Africa Radio. And most recently, we've been very happy to have her as a producer with us here at The Comb.
Just check. Yeah, you're sounding good. Right, so I should actually say a formal welcome to the other side of the mic.
Are you sure?
But while she's been doing great work as a journalist, giving a voice to other people, Aisha has her own remarkable story, and we've been hoping to explore it for a while. Now, I have been meaning to get you onto The Comb for a while now. So why are we talking now? Why has this finally happened?
Well, I guess... my recent trip to Mogadishu inspired this. Going back home, all those emotions. There's a lot of memories that come back from my childhood. I was 15 when I lived there last time, and now I am 30. It's just all the change that has been happening to me. That's what I've been reflecting on.
We all change as we grow up. But for Aisha, there's particular significance in this difference between her life now and her childhood in Mogadishu.
I was born at the end of 1991, after the Somali central government collapsed and there was a civil war going on. I've only known chaos and conflict, you know. Like, I haven't known peace until I was in my teenage years when I left Somalia.
So Aisha was a child of conflict, growing up and figuring out the world in a situation that was dominated by violence and chaos. In the last few years, more and more children have been condemned to this reality, with conflicts in Ethiopia, northern Nigeria, the DRC, Afghanistan, Syria, Ukraine. The list goes on.
I've just been looking at that and remembering myself as a child in 1990s. It's a different time and different place. But I know they are experiencing exactly some of the things that I've experienced growing up.
So that's what we're going to be exploring. Life surrounded by conflict, childhood that happened in the spaces between, and the transformations involved in leaving a war zone and figuring out who you are in peacetime.
This is The Comb.
Ye ni The Comb.
The Comb, no.
Ni The Comb.
The Comb.
It's a city of contradictions.
Mm.
It's so beautiful. The weather is always right. It's by the coast.
One of the many things Aisha is famous for in our office, along with her cooking, gift giving and tea drinking, is her love for the city she calls home, Mogadishu.
So there is a lot of borrowed culture, both in the language, in the food. It used to be a trade city, so there's a lot of spices and all of that.
Aisha grew up in a relatively quiet area, close to the airport, with big houses that were covered with bougainvillea flowers.
Growing up in Mogadishu was a mixed feeling. Lots of people who are so happy. Somalis are happy, even though so much is happening. They are unsafe. They don't have enough food. They don't have enough money. There are people who are always smiling and they think, like, dwelling on things does not really help you. So despite what was going on, the neighbours helped each other. You know, my grandmother always had people come in really early in the morning to have coffee with her. And then neighbours were just visiting each other. You know, Somalia was going through a really hard time, but people were always... have always been there for each other.
That hard time that Somalia was going through, the ever-evolving but always present conflict, it was a constant background rumble in Aisha's early years. These days, Aisha can instantly rattle off the chronology of who was fighting who, where and when, and the many layers of grievances, politics and international interference behind each stage. But as a young child, the conflict played out for Aisha through its consequences on everyday life.
I also remember always, because I've been told not to go anywhere without my trousers, be ready. you should always be wearing your trousers because
why?
In case you need to run or whatever, women were also getting raped a lot everywhere. So I remember from really young age, my dad was always telling me that I need to be ready. It was always like, be quiet. There was always a sense of fear.
And Aisha, how did you process that at such a young age?
I don't think I was. You know, I was a kid, so I didn't really grasp what was going on. But, you know, I was sheltered. We were at home most of the time. That area we lived was a bit safer than the rest of the city, what was going on. Mm-hmm. So later on, I would understand more and more. And there was stories always of, you know, something is happening outside. People are coming and talking about it in the evening. So you hear, you know, somebody died, somebody got... something happened to somebody. And I was that kid who always listened to everything. Right. I was always listening.
All parents worry, wherever you are in the world, in whatever situation. But the dangers in Mogadishu were very real, especially for women and girls.
Being a little girl in Mogadishu wasn't very safe. You know, girls being molested, girls have been abducted, or somebody run away with somebody's daughter, like a really young daughter, you know. So it wasn't, the environment wasn't very safe. And also on top of that, there was the actual fighting between different clans all the time going on. Today is this and that, tomorrow is something else, different area is safe, different area is not safe. So it was always like that. There was always that sense of, you know, you're a girl, you need to stay at home.
But perhaps just as enduring as a parent's ability to worry in any situation is a child's ability to be a child, to play, to gossip with friends, to get caught up in friendship dramas, and to want to impress.
But yeah, we were always, you know, concerned about, you know, so-and-so has nice shoes. Or one of the most memorable things about childhood in Somalia is that, you know, Eid is the time you get new clothes at the end of Ramadan. And everybody, you choose your dress and you hide it for the whole month of Ramadan. Because when Eid day you come out with your new dress and all the neighborhood girls will come out as well. It used to be the thing, it was like a runway show. Mm-hmm. So you would be hiding and everybody would be like, what's the color of your dress? Is it going to be red? Is it going to be blue? And it's just that excitement. I remember we were happy, you know, with everything going on. There was so much joy. But I think at the back of it, you always knew you need to be ready if your family has to run again.
In Aisha's early childhood, the fighting in Somalia was mainly local, between different clans and warlords. But when she was a teenager, the dynamic of the conflict changed. In the wake of 9/11, the Western world was nervous of any corners of the world where terror groups might find a safe haven. So the rise of a hardline political group called the Islamic Union Courts caused alarm. Interest outside of Somalia grew, and the international community sent forces to try and end the fighting. When did you first hear the term peacekeeper?
So I was like 14 around that time.
14, okay.
Yeah, so this was like in 2006, I think. My first experience of the peacekeeping mission forces was massive chaos. Soldiers are inside, but then there's one of them outside with like a massive machine gun.
Right.
People would always let them pass because they were going really fast.
They'd go fast.
Yeah.
Right.
And I understand. As a grown-up now, I understand for them it must be also, you know, being in a foreign country, you know, trying to fight and everything. It must be stressful for them. But it was really scary. There was always stories of them running over people. It was always, when you see them, Somalis will know this. They're scared of them.
Scared of them.
So you let them pass. So we were hearing Ugandan troops are coming. This is me that I know nothing about Uganda. There were men with, you know, hats and, you know, soldier clothes and all of that.
Yeah.
And I just remember seeing that and it was a bit scary.
Peacekeepers are regular soldiers who've been assigned to a different kind of mission. They wear regular fatigues, but with the addition of blue berets or helmets to mark them out from invading or hostile troops. The intended message is that they're here to protect civilians, to actively prevent violence. But for Aisha, who was used to local militias who wore regular clothes, the addition of a soldier's uniform wasn't reassuring.
So Somalis really don't like foreigners coming. we were kids in school. The way we saw it was like we were being invaded in some sense. That's how it felt. I know the government and also, you know, the AU and other people who are in charge decided this on a table. Mm. But everyday people like me or my parents or my neighbors had no say in this. Mm. And we've already known trouble. We've already known, you know, it's just more men with guns.
More men.
You know, that's the last thing we needed. Mm. Or we thought we needed anyway.
Despite fighting already being such a familiar feature of life in Somalia, that feeling of now being invaded was different somehow, even more threatening.
I remember neighborhood resistant groups formed in some areas of Mogadishu.
Oh, right.
My school friends' parents were part of it in some areas. So there was a lot of emotions going on. We thought our country, other people were coming. And even though we've never actually had a country or a peace or a government, we still had like all this blood pumping. Yeah.
Aisha remembers her early years as an exhausting pattern of displacement, running, settling, returning, and running again. With everyone living right in the middle of the conflict, relatives would come to stay for months or even years when their places had become a prize to be fought over by warlords. But then Aisha's own home would suddenly become a battlefield as well, and they would all have to flee again. Even when things seemed calm, danger could erupt out of nowhere.
I remember one day we were coming back because we used to walk all the time. There was a lady who was selling tea in one of the areas. And I remember an older man pushing a wheelbarrow on the other side of the road. But then he was carrying some metallic, like a cherry can.
Okay, metal
one of
container.
Those metal container.
Right.
Yeah, he was pushing it. Yeah. And at some point he dropped it to the floor.
Right.
And that made a big sound. But then coming through the road where the peacekeepers, and I remember because they had the sound, I think they must have assumed there was an explosion ahead of them on the road or something like that. And automatically they started shooting. I remember me and my brother and my sister were on the floor. They were shooting for a few minutes.
For a few minutes?
Yeah, to just, and then they realized there wasn't anything. And they just continued.
There was another incident at a cafe. Again, it seems to have been a case of peacekeepers panicking and firing their weapons. This time, people were hurt and killed. Aisha wasn't there herself, but the incident cost her two of her neighborhood friends, teenage boys hanging out at a cafe.
There's this famous restaurant called Fateh. It's like a fast food place. People go and sit there, there's ice cream, there's tea. I wasn't there that day, mm-hmm. but they shot so many people there.
Why? What do you understand? What do you remember of that incident?
I think they just got scared of something. You know, in Mogadishu, it's so normal to hear a gunshot. Really normal. Even if it didn't kill anybody, there's even like a market where they sell guns in the city where people go buy a gun and then they shoot on the sky. So maybe they had gunshots around somewhere. I can't remember that, but I remember very well that they shot people, and among those people were really two people that were I knew very well. Two boys from my neighborhood.
How old were they?
They were like my age, so 14. You know, going 15 around there, or maybe 1 year older than I am.
Those boys were obviously your contemporaries, mm-hmm. Not in any way involved in the fighting, but they were killed because they're in the wrong place at the wrong time, killed by peacekeepers. Mm-hmm. Is it possible to reflect on what impact incidents like that have on you psychologically in terms of understanding your place in the world?
Yeah. I think it scares you. You know, people you've known your whole life who were in the same neighborhood are gone now. You know, their families are mourning. You don't see them at school anymore. The tragic death story is going around. And just you realize, you know, you go out of your house every day and you don't know if you will come back to it or not. It's a feeling that Somalis in general, especially people in Mogadishu, know too well. Once any of them get scared or any of them have an issue, They're not really just shooting at the person they want, but they're just shooting around. So you're in the middle of all these powers. You're just a kid. And you realize how small you are. You know, your life is not worth much.
Aisha left Somalia when she was 15.
My parents just wanted me to have a better opportunities to go to school. My aunt lived in Uganda, so I've been sent there so that I can, you know, get education and all of that.
Aisha was sent to Uganda, her first time away from home, to the country she has only ever known before for its peacekeepers, those uniformed soldiers and huge armored vehicles who seemed like a terrifying invading force.
I really was scared because you know, Ugandan soldiers die in Somalia, Ugandans know about it. And even when I was there, at some point there were a time when there was a bad news how so many of their soldiers died in Somalia, and then people were having some sort of not a fight, but in Somali area and between Ugandans and Somalis were like stuff like that. So first of all, my trip living in Somalia was very emotional because I've never left, and then I am being sent to go to another country. I didn't know anything about Uganda. So I remember crying throughout the journey until I came to Kenya, and then I was like, yeah, no one is taking me back. I need to just get on with it. Coming to Uganda, Uganda was green, was just beautiful, was serene. The only issues were the potholes on the road, on the sides of the road, that I nearly dropped in a couple of times at least because I'm just absent-minded when I'm walking around.
Hazardous potholes aside, Uganda offered Aisha something which truly transformed her understanding of the world.
And so suddenly I was experiencing peace. Like, there were no issues. There were no groups fighting. There were no guns to be seen. Like, in Mogadishu, you would see people with guns everywhere. It was so normal on the streets. People have AK-47, people have pistols. All of that. Uganda, there was no such thing. There were just bada-bada men around. People in their shops, people just happily, you know, joking, laughing. Ugandans are very kind and generous people from what I've known. So it's completely different. I also remember just seeing, you know, road signs and all of that. There was nothing like that in Somalia because of the war. Everything broke down.
Now, experiencing life at peace for the first time, Aisha could recognize how so many aspects of her regular life so far, things she'd always accepted as normal, had been shaped and dictated by the conflict.
It changed the way you see things. Just the ability that you can go out, you can go get, you know, water or whatever you need because it's so safe for you to do that. You can't put a price on that, you know, the sense of tranquility, you're safe now. And it's just people are going about their day, it's completely different, and you can plan things ahead. And things won't be disrupted rather than doing things last minute or just having at the back of your head that anything can go wrong. There is no that sense anymore, you know. Things will be okay. You could just go and visit whoever you want. You can look for whatever you're looking for in the market without worrying about if you will be back home safely. So it's just that idea of, you know, you calm down and then you just start learning to live in a peaceful place.
Perhaps in part because of the new appreciation for how life could be in a place free from conflict, a particularly horrific event in 2009 hit Aisha in a different way to the many painful incidents she'd lived through before and marked a change in her relationship with her first home.
So a group of people were graduating from a university in Mogadishu, a graduation of doctors. And you know, a country like us, seeing something like that, you know, doctors graduating from a university within our own country, it was a moment that was filled with hope.
The graduation of students was a rare event, and hundreds had turned up for the ceremony.
They were graduating in a hotel very close to my neighborhood, and some horrible human being decided to bomb those kids.
Nobody was expecting explosion inside a hotel where a meeting was taken.
The bombing killed 24 people and injured another 60. Students, doctors, journalists and ministers.
We lost so many people that day. And I remember being in Uganda just so sad. It was just one horrible event after another. And I think I was really sad for a long time after that. And I knew the people there. One of my cousins was, my cousin is still alive, but his friends, you know, there was one guy who was also my classmate and actually my neighbor, like two doors down my house. He wasn't graduating. He was just at the party as one of the people working on it and also reading a recitation of the Quran because he had a beautiful voice. So he died in that explosion. So that was one of the things that just made my heart sink. Otherwise, I'm a very optimistic human being. I am filled with hope, you know. Nothing can just... But that event sat with me. And I wasn't part of it or I wasn't there. But I just knew the people, you know. It just shows that civilians and everyday people in Somalia are the ones who are paying the highest price, always. We, everyday people, die. We are raised on this hope that we are the future of Somalia, and then we just watched them die. That just sat with me for a long time, for years actually.
The impact of that event on Aisha was also affected by the new life she had in Uganda, seeing the possibilities of life beyond conflict.
The rest of the world is not doing that. There is a different way of living. There's a better way of living. And now I am in Uganda, and you see students, you know, I was living very close to Kampala Secondary School. You know, students are in their uniform, in groups, crossing roads safely, doing their own thing, laughing, joking. And then you just realize that, you know, it's the opposite. They don't want to change for the better. And it makes you so angry that they're stuck there when the rest of the world is, like, so much better.
Since then, Aisha has been back to Somalia a handful of times, but as a visitor. In Uganda, she was recognised as a refugee, and she finally moved to the UK and made London her home.
Half of my life I've been away.
Right. And how would you say you've changed?
I think I grew so much. I have gone through different things, did different jobs, went to school. So yeah, I'm way different than the girl I was when I was in Mogadishu. I think when you're in Somalia, you're just living, surviving, and then you suddenly are in a safe space, and then you're like growing up, and then you're like, oh, who am I? Because you've never had that space to ask yourself in the past that, you know, who am I, who I want to be. And then suddenly you're with yourself and your thoughts, and you're not surviving anymore. It was a shock, you know, to have to think, who am I? Oh, I'm not in Mogadishu anymore. I'm not scared for my life anymore. It's time to figure something out.
And has living abroad as part of the diaspora, has that changed your sense of identity?
It did, yeah. I'm always Somali to the core. I am always Mogadishu's daughter. But now it's like I've lived in London and I love this city and I genuinely feel like I belong here. And I don't see myself as a foreigner, but also I think that experience growing up in Somalia and all of that also shapes a big part of me.
Mogadishu has also changed in the time that Aisha's been away. Although frequent attacks from Al-Shabaab mean true peace is still a distant dream, The time of ongoing battles between warlords and clan-based militias has ended, and the city is transforming, with tall buildings changing the skyline, business centres thriving, and education institutions looking to Somalia's future. Now, returning to her first home as an adult, Aisha is able to enjoy things that were previously off-limits, like Mogadishu's beautiful beaches.
We grew up 10 minutes away from the beach in Mogadishu. I've never been to the beach until I was 25. When I went back as a grown-up for the second time, that's when I went to the beach and literally dipped my feet in. Like, growing up, there was gangs always hanging out by the beach, so girls were never allowed. I was never allowed to go.
What was it like putting your feet in the water for the first time at the age of 25?
It was glorious. You know, if you Google Lido Beach, yeah, everybody knows it. This is the place to be in Mogadishu. And there is this now little restaurants on the side, and they sell like samosas and like really Somali tea that has like cardamom and cinnamon. It smells really heavenly. So people in Mogadishu love to go around 3 o'clock, 3:30, sit there. You know, the air is just so calming. And I kept going when I was in Mogadishu last time, 2017, with my sisters. All the time. I have pictures of me by the, like, literally just with my long dress in there. You know, it was just, I used to go every afternoon because it was just so different than when I was growing up.
Thanks for listening to this episode. Next week on The Comb.
The doctors decided that they want to inject me with a sedative. I refused because I also didn't know what was going on. So I was a bit defiant. I didn't want them to inject me because, again, I thought they want to kill me with the injection.
This episode was produced by Mary Goodhart and me, Kim Chakanetsa. Rob Wilson did the sound design. Our studio manager was Daphith Evans. And Piers Lynch is our editor. Our thanks to Aisha for sharing her story with us.